Welcome to the Loaded Goat. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Chris.
So, Chris, you remember me talking to you about on a previous episode about that place that I went to that I wanted to get breakfast sandwiches at, and they weren't ready.
I do.
Well, I just wanted to give you an update and give our listeners an update. They finally have started serving breakfast sandwiches. And
oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they have a wide variety. They've got a bacon, egg and cheese, an egg.
Aaron, we have guests.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry. I apologize.
We're in the company of experts, Aaron.
We are in the company of
experts.
I know
that you're a sandwich expert, but let's save that for the blooper reel.
All right.
You're acting too much like me.
I apologize. All right. We have today Randy Turner, Mayberryan historian and author and publisher, is with us. And we also have Spirit Walker, who just recently worked with Randy's publishing company to publish the Mayberry Rerun Watchers Guide Season 1. So welcome, both of y'all.
Thanks.
Nice to be here.
So I'd just be curious how this kind of came to be. Spirit Walker, I read your piece, Christopher and I both did, on A Feud is a Feud in the newsletter, in Randy's newsletter, and mm-hmm. on the cabin from No Time for Sergeants, and how it was featured again as A Feud is a Feud. So I'd be curious just to learn about you and how you got into Mayberry history and what led you to this book.
Okay. It might have been a little more than two years ago. I was looking at different Andy Griffith show groups on Facebook. I always loved the show, watched it ever since I was little. I'm only a year younger than Ron Howard, so he was like my big brother when I was growing up on TV. I always wanted to be like Opie, and he had cool friends. He had a cool dad. I had a cool dad, too. I'm not saying I didn't. So I've always loved the show, but I never really got deep into it, and I just all of a sudden just wanted to know more. So I joined a bunch of groups, and I was asking questions and commenting on things, and I found out real quick that a lot of them really didn't know. Their answers were sketchy at best. I'd research a little bit and find out that wasn't exactly true. So I started my own group to share just accurate information. I started the Andy Griffith Show Esquire Club group on Facebook. And I hooked up with Alan Newsom's podcast, Two Chairs No Waiting, and I would watch it. And I was catching up on all the back episodes. He had 590-something at that time. So I had a lot of catching up to do. But I kept listening. Well, one day I was talking to somebody on the group, and I had been researching for a while then, and I was talking to somebody on the group, and I was watching an episode of Two Chairs on my TV across the room, and he was interviewing this guy named Randy Turner, who I knew was doing a segment. And so I'm looking down, I'm typing, and I'm commenting about the 40 acres backlot. We're talking about specifics about the backlot on the Facebook group with this individual. And I'm looking up at the screen. I'm seeing a split screen of Alan and Randy's name under it, Randy Turner. I'm looking down, looking up. And all of a sudden, I realize the name on my screen on my computer is the same as on the TV. I'm talking to Randy Turner. So I called him out on it, and I said, "Are you that Randy Turner?" He admitted he was. And then we just started talking. And I was sharing things on my Facebook group. I was breaking down episodes like you guys do, but more technically, I didn't have a Chris, you know, to keep it light.
No one does.
No one does. I mean, I struck gold when I met this man. Yes. Yeah.
So I was getting very technical, and I put things on there, and I put that how I discovered the location of the cabin on A Feud is a Feud. Randy liked it. He asked me if I'd write that article for his Ambassadors Club magazine. I was more than happy to. I was already an ambassador at that time. I'd already talked to him about that. And I said, you know, I kind of toyed with an idea of writing a book. And he said, if you write it, I will publish it. And so the rest of it is a lot of work.
Yeah,
I'll interject here that I've been asked by other people to publish things, and I don't want Liberty Grove Press to be a vanity press.
Sure.
But I had seen what he had done on his website, I mean, on his Facebook group, and I knew he was serious about it. And I said, yeah, if you do write something, I'd certainly be open to publishing it. And I didn't have to worry with Spirit Walker about it being a good quality or thorough, because it was extremely thorough. And he'll tell you, I made him jump through hoops if I wasn't sure about it. Are you sure about that? Not only was he had the proof to back everything up, and I wouldn't have published it if it was crap, quite frankly. And yeah, that's how it came about.
Randy was very thorough in vetting the information that I would give him. I'd send him a chapter, and he'd say, where did you get that information? I'd say, Two Chairs No Waiting, Neil Brower interview with Bruce Bilson, at the X minute mark.
And yeah, it's kind of amazing how thorough he was. It's like he must have an index. He was like,
that's great.
Even though it's, and a lot of, you know, it's like everybody else. I've read all those books and all that, but like Andy and Don, for example, I've read that, but man, it's probably been 8 years, you know, right when it was published, and I've not reread it. And he was extremely thorough. So, yeah.
Well, it's good to know. So when I get, send my next piece for the Ambassadors Club magazine, I can't just make stuff up. I have to actually have some sources and verification.
No fake peck and paw facts in this.
No, thing. Okay. All right, good stuff. I can do that. So with that, I would be curious to know, you're talking about jumping through hoops, and I feel like that when you're writing anything fact-based, especially when it's digging in history and into history and trying to verify how things happened or tell the story, there's so many places you'd have to jump through hoops. Could you tell me, Spirit Walker, kind of some of the hoops you jump through or some of the places you do your research?
Yes, I do a lot of research through watching interviews. Looked at every YouTube channel. There's a couple of really good YouTube videos by other YouTubers who do a lot of locations for TV shows. And I found some really good ones. I was able to catch screenshots, things like that. Recently, Randy and I were talking about a filming location of a season 2 episode, because I'm writing book 2 now. And boy, we just could not find it. And I Google map searched, 3D map, the whole area where I thought it might be, can't find anything. I reached out to a couple of movie ranches to see if they knew, and got a pretty hot lead on one location. And so I said, Randy, do you know where this was shot? He said, I was hoping you'd figure it out. So
made it easy for me. Now I just got a Spirit Walker, will figure it out. That'll be all right.
But I'm enjoying the search. I joined backlot groups of people that actually were roaming the back lot illegally back in the day when they were kids. But just, I ask everybody, and I read voracious. I'm a voracious reader, so I have all the books. I'm listening to all your back podcasts. I'm in season 2 now, and I noticed you giving out a lot of information from Neil Brower's book, Mayberry 101. I said, oh, he got the book.
I did. I try to find as much as I can. I've got a stack of books about this high, and with every podcast I go in, not to tell you how the sausage is made, but I basically map out every episode as far as telling the story, and then I go back and I try to find everything I can to help add to it. And I've actually, one of the things I've tried to do on my end is go through maybe newspapers.com, where you can actually look up facts about the episode. But most of the time, it's just, what I am always amazed is the level of leeway that local papers were given to write previews of each episode and how much detail they could go into. And I'm always, just makes me wonder how much information was actually handed out prior to them airing on television.
I've wanted the same thing with all my research as well. Get really deep into those old periodicals.
But, sorry, you do it accordingly. You do it accordingly.
Yeah, exactly.
But I use newspaper.com as well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find background actors and things like that, because I'm fascinated with the background people, with the people in the background you see all the time. Marvell Lawrence has finally been identified, Nyjah Stanley. And, you know, we're still after Mr. Schwamp. And there's quite a few others that I'd really like. There's a man I call the Smiling Man. And it's because, remember when Barney arrested those 19 people and had them in the cell? There were 20 people in the count of Opie. But there were 19 people that were arrested. And there's a guy that comes out. He's a background actor. And as he walks by the camera, he does what all background actors are not supposed to do. He looks at the camera and smiles as if he's saying, look, Mom, I'm on TV. He's in about 12 episodes in season 1. I keep spotting the guy now, and I want to know who that guy is. So I get fascinated with things like that.
Are there others where you've done like a deep dive? I mean, have you listened to Dark Side of the Moon with the Wizard alongside the Wizard of Oz? I mean, that's always the one that people always hold up, and it does work. I mean, I've seen people do it, but I didn't know. Are there other areas where you've done deep dives on?
A few areas, not on TV show. I was a published author before I met Randy, but my previously published books are novels and, you know, fictional books.
Sure.
I have 3 more finished that I haven't sold yet. So this was my first nonfiction book where I really had to dive in. But I am an American Indian historian, so I study American Indian history, Old West history, things like that. And wow. So, yeah, deep dive into that stuff.
So before we dive into the book, if people want to find the book, where do they need to go?
Mayberrybooks.com. That's where you go. That's the place to go.
And the other thing that you have that we were recently on and really enjoyed participating in is your YouTube series on the Andy Griffith Show. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, I started Spirit of Mayberry on Monday, October 3rd, 2022, because that was the exact day 62 years earlier that the Andy Griffith Show aired its first season, Monday, October 3rd, 1960. And so I try to take the title of each episode, the new housekeeper being the first one. My first episode was the new tags keeper. So presenting myself as the new tags keeper on YouTube and trying to answer the questions that people have. You and Chris had a lot of questions when you did season one that I could have answered. You know, this way you have a research source on YouTube that you can go there and you can look at each episode and you'll see what I'm covering.
Yeah,
I had you guys on there because I was covering it. A topic that you guys would be really good at because nobody has watched more TV and movies than Chris.
That
and
is...
you two together know all the sitcoms and movies, and it was about what made the Andy Griffith Show different than others.
No, we had so much fun doing that. And then Randy texted me and told me that we were talking about the Breaking Bad reference where they recreated the fishing hole scene with Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul. And you were there, apparently, Randy.
Yeah, I was. I was out there. I had a daughter at that point, lived in California. We went out to visit and went up to LA and went to the Franklin Canyon Reservoir. And the bad thing for me was I was so looking forward to really exploring that area. Well, where Andy and Opie walk, that side of the lake, and we say lake, it was actually, at that point, it was the drinking water reservoir back in the day for Beverly Hills. And the other thing, if you're up there, it's pretty amazing because you do feel like you're so far from anything. And I'm not exaggerating. 5-minute drive, you're downtown Hollywood. You're right there, really, just up in the hills. But at any rate, I couldn't circle the lake. There's a dam. And at the end of the dam, they wouldn't let me continue. So I stopped and asked, and they were filming stuff. And they told me, well, be sure to watch the amazing. And then, in fact, on my MayberryBooks.com, I keep needing to someday fix that banner picture. But if you look at the banner picture, it's a photo with the 40-acre of a Franklin Canyon. You look real closely, you'll see a spot of orange. That was a tent
that
they had set up. But they have those big, you know, those like, they're like, I can't remember what they're called. They're RVs, basically, you know. Mm-hmm. And they just had that completely blocked off. You couldn't drive over there. That was the only thing disappointing about it. But it was kind of fun. Then I, you know, not all that long later, I saw it on the Emmys at the, you know, it was one of the opening sequence things. Pretty funny. So.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. So what we thought we would do in diving into the book is so detailed, we could spend hours and hours walking through each episode on the days. Book. I thought we'd, days. I mean, it could go, this could be a 15-hour podcast. But we were thinking we'd do a few episodes, and I would basically just like to hear, say with the new housekeeper, when you were doing your research, that's the very first one, what was maybe the hardest fact in the book to uncover?
In the whole book?
Oh, no, in The New Housekeeper.
In The New Housekeeper? The hardest thing, Andy's truck.
Really?
Yeah, Andy's truck. Everybody kept telling me it's never seen again, and I discovered it's in two other... It's in the book.
Yeah, and then with the manhunt, that really... I mean, because I feel like the Andy Griffith show...
Let me say something real quick.
Yeah, sure. By all means.
That was the first place you like... The opening scene, the very first opening scene, is the first B-roll footage from the Andy Griffith Show. It's used as an opening scene in two other episodes of season one. It's the first time, the only time that Andy's kitchen door ever had a doorknob and only opened in one direction. It's the only time there's a platform underneath the front windows. There are a lot of firsts, but those are only in season one. It's the only time you ever see the shortened version of Andy's porch. There's a lot of things that only, because it was a new show, they were trying to, they hadn't even decided yet which house Andy was going to have on the 40-acre lot. That's why the scene of him waxing the squad car is an enigma. It was not anywhere on the 40 acres lot. And we can't figure out where it was. So that's still a mystery.
I'll jump in here and mention Bruce Bilson, who was the assistant director for the first 2 years. You know, he insisted to me, it was on the 40 acres. But if you really know it, like Spirit Walker and I do, I mean, it doesn't exist anymore, but if you look, you know, seen so many photos and things filmed there, it was not on the 40 acres. You know, nobody's really sure where it was. I've kind of always assumed it was a real residential street, and they just rented the, you know, garages to shoot it. And they eventually, well, right away, chose a facade on the 40-acre backlot to be the Taylor house. But at that point, they had, and nobody still really knows exactly where that is. So they've never been able to determine it, so...
Well,
it's a mystery.
Yeah. Well, here's one theory or one mystery that you so you point out in The Manhunt that the name of the boat is Gertrude.
Right.
Now, I don't know. I don't know if you've heard this theory or if this theory has resonated with you.
It's catching a lot of traction. I read about it all over Reddit.
Clearly, it is, Chris.
Yeah. So, Christopher's belief is Gertrude is named after Andy's wife. And that's how it got the name.
I read that in the paper one day. Somebody had picked it up from The Wire.
Yeah,
it was reported. I don't think, it's not a very fitting way tribute to your wife to have a leaky boat, but could have been a good boat at one time. But yeah, I heard that rumor.
And one of the
Chris, if I could just say something, Chris, you have missed a lot of good conspiracies. I'm listening to your podcast and I'm screaming at you. What about this, Chris? What about
I'll up the ante here a little bit in the next couple seasons.
Well, what good one would you say is one that he should be really exploring? Because he comes up with these conspiracy theories on his own. But if you could point him in the right direction, there's no telling what type of rabbit hole he'll go down.
Chris and the new housekeeper, Rose, who's played by Mary Treen, right? Yep. She promises Opie she's going to come back to visit. And then you never see Rose again. But you do see Clara Lindsay in those Gossiping Men. Clara Lindsay is Mary Treen, okay? Now, Mary Treen's character, Rose, married Wilbur Pine in the first season, in the first episode. Guess who her husband is when she's Clara Lindsay? Her husband is the same actor, and they're the first couple to play two different married couples. But now their names are Sam and Clara Lindsay. So what happened there? Did they witness a crime and get put in the witness protection program? Had to change their names, move back to Mayberry?
Yeah.
I did come back to visit, but as a whole different person.
I think they're definitely the first iteration of witness protection where before they realized that you had to move people out of the same city.
Yeah. But then in the beauty pageant episode, you see Sam Lindsay, Frank Ferguson, who played her husband. You see him. He's still got the same name, but he has a different wife now. So what did the mob catch on and knock her off? And then did they get in too deep, had to go deeper into undercover and get a new wife? Now he's got a daughter, Barbara Sue Lindsay. And
Spirit Walker, I think you're making a mistake encouraging Chris as much.
Yeah. But, we can't speak about the mob on this after what happened last time we did it. So we don't go that way.
Yeah. That is. Thank you, Randy. I mean, you averted a catastrophe here. So I guess,
Chris, we got to have a Zoom meeting.
I think we do.
So one episode that jumps out to me, there's a bunch of episodes in season one, obviously, that jump out to me. But I was curious. One, it is a common statement amongst Mayberry books that Ellie Saves a Female is the first makeover in television history. And I was just curious if in your research that's ever been confirmed or if there's any evidence to the contrary. I would just be curious to know that. And if you don't know, I know there's some questions that aren't answerable from 50s television.
Yeah, as far as I know, I don't. The first time I heard that idea put forth was on your podcast. And I went, I wonder if that's true. I have no idea. I do know, however, Chris, that the nail polish was not glitter. It was frosted cherry bonbon is what it was.
Oh, good.
I told you.
Yeah, that's solidarity.
Yeah. Glitter, So I guess my last question would be, would you say, was there one factor, one piece of information that was the hardest to track down?
I'm fascinated with calendars. And so in my book, you will see a bunch of calendars that I figured out the year and the month of that calendar. And some of that was hard to figure out. The location of the Wakefield cabin took a lot of investigation. It's in there.
I think Sam Becker's house was one that was used a lot. Yeah.
Randy and I went around and around about Sam Becker's house for a while, but I finally figured out the
location. You did it. Yeah.
And I had to provide photographic evidence to Randy to get him to agree, but I made a slideshow for Randy and sent it to him with arrows and circles. And
you also had found a call sheet and that the house was really just a flat. Most of the sods would be the front and the sides and a partial roof. This was literally just a flat held up by 2x4s with a porch. And he found out it had a name. I can't remember what the name of the call sheet was.
The Mud House.
Yeah, the Mud House.
The Mud House. Yeah. On the call sheet that said report to the Mud House.
Yeah. And clearly on the 40 acres. Part of the reason I wasn't sure initially when I did 60 Years of Mayberry, my book, one of the people that wrote an essay for it was Leroy Mack, who was in the Country Boys. That was the band that Andy played with when the guy came through town to make a record. And then they were at Sam Becker's as a kind of an impromptu baby shower. Well, the first one, that was all done in the studio. But in the second one, they were obviously on a, you know, a back lot. And Leroy said, I never went to the 40 acres. That was at MGM. Hmm. And that's why I was originally thinking, oh, I didn't think it was there, but clearly was there. I mean, Spirit Walker nailed it down. It's clearly that's where it was. So,
And I talked twice to Leroy Mack about the same subject. And he said, I didn't tell him what I, you know, I talked to him before I figured it out. But he told me the same thing he told Randy. It was on the MGM lot. Which was close by, granted, but not that close.
In fairness, too, when people like Spirit Walker and I approach these actors, to us, it seemed like so monumental. You were there where they filmed this. And to them, a lot of them is like, well, it was just, Leroy was a little different. He was a musician. But a lot of the actors, it's like, yeah, it was, you know, I did a lot of those jobs. It was, it's not that memorable to them. Yeah. But us, we think they would remember every detail. And, you know, to them, it's like, no, not really. They don't remember, so...
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And when you're talking to child actors, like recently on my Facebook group, I put a question about, tell me a lesson that Andy taught Opie, a life lesson. Because in 2 weeks, I'm doing an episode on Opie's parenting for Opie's charity. Mm-hmm. And it'll be about life lessons that Andy taught Opie. And so I put a feeler out there on Facebook group just to get some ideas. Somebody sent me about 5 or 6 ideas in one comment. And I looked at the bottom, it said Howie Pruitt. And I said, who signed it, Howie Pruitt? And I looked up at the sender and it was Dennis Rush, who played Howie Pruitt on the show. And so I said, Dennis, I need to talk to you. So I spent an hour and a half on the phone with him, got a lot of really good information on what it was like to be a kid actor on the show. And he had pretty good memory of it, even though he was 12, I think, at the last time.
He has better than most of the child actors. He very well, yeah.
He loved the show. He just couldn't wait to get back on the show.
I was going to say, well, I encourage folks to read this, especially if you love to do a deep dive on the Andy Griffith Show. This is a perfect companion to sit down and watch an episode and almost watch it scene by scene and see the tidbits. And I really appreciate y'all coming on. Spirit Walker, again, if they want to find the book, where should they go?
Mayberrybooks.com. All one word, MayberryBooks.com.
Awesome.
Books with an N.
All right.
Well, thank y'all for joining and thank y'all for listening. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think about it, subscribe. Next week, we start season 1 with Opie the Birdman. And until then, Christopher, be well.
We start season 4 with Opie the Birdman. And I'd like you to start listing off some sandwiches again.